Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 86. Going to continue our reviews of the fantasy baseball positions, heading to the mound, starting pitching 1 through 30 on the ADP. We'll talk about some other fun stuff along the way, as usual. And, yeah, I guess get ready for, it's almost Christmas, for crying out loud. It's crazy. We're moving through the season. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
Doing good, man. Getting back into the swing, I guess. Took Thanksgiving off with the forecaster out. Needed a little break, and now we're back. Did the normal eating, drinking, watching college football, and now got my initial 2024 spreadsheet ready to go for our Gladiator draft in like a week and a half. Yep. We can talk a little bit more about. But no, I'm doing good. How are you doing?
I'm doing well. It's like I said, Thanksgiving's behind us. We're in go mode. I've got drafts going, of course. Draft one, not plural one. And I'm ready. Finishing up the black book. That'll be nice when that's done, and just continue to plug along for 2024 now, because it's going to sneak up on us really, really quick.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
But yeah, it was a bummer. We only have one real big weekend of college football left. I know you're a big college football guy, like you said, watching games. That's my fun. It's going away because everyone saw my tweet on the NFL product out there, which is just complete hot garbage. So hopefully baseball can come back soon, real soon. That'd be great. Yeah, I appreciate
absolutely.
It.
Absolutely.
All right, you hinted at a Gladiator. Did you want to discuss this at all, or it's going to be next Thursday live on this show at 11:30 p.m. Eastern time? It's full.
Yeah, we were gonna announce a Gladiator listener league and get people to sign up. And so when did you open up the league on?
I think it was like
Thursday, Friday.
Friday, I think. I think it was the day after Thanksgiving, give or take.
Yeah, and so it's already filled. We didn't even have to promote it, and so we got a full crew. Need to thank the degenerates, your normal NFBC crew of Gladiator drafters. We have Waxman, Rob DiPietro, Gialdi's in there, Dom, the bullpen guru's in there.
Fish.
So you got the Fish, John Fish, of course. So so the league got flooded by the degenerates, which will be good. They'll have about, I don't know, what, 50, 60 Gladiators under their belt by
they'll take us to school. It'll be fun.
By the time we start. So but no, it'll be fun. For those not aware of the Gladiator format, it's 23 rounds. 5x5, you basically draft your team, your starting lineup, and that's it. So you don't touch it anymore. And then injuries be damned, you win or lose. So we'll do it live on the show. Probably have the draft board up and just talk through it. I'm sure the a bunch of the, even though it's not technically a listener league, a lot of those folks do listen to the show. So I'm sure we'll get some comments and smack talk back and forth. So I'm really looking forward to it. We'll do it right after our reliever preview show next Tuesday. So we'll be done with reviews. We'll do the draft and then figure something out after that in December.
Yeah, we'll have tons of fun. Don't you worry. We'll have you guys covered here. But tonight we are starting pitching. One ADP 1 through 30, Thursday night 31 through 60, and late round surprises. But unlike previous positions, this is not as obviously top heavy as before. So before we get going, Ryan, you have some thoughts on the Bloom board that does definitely look different than the hitting positions.
It does. And so the trend on the hitter side was that like the elite of the elite at pretty much every position, your top five or six pretty much returned that type of value. The pitcher side was much more of a shit show. And I just, you can break this down. Like, so I've got the board up for the YouTube crowd, for the live stream crowd. We've got the board up with the typical format that we're all used to by now, except we've got ERA, whip, and strikeouts as our categories, except for instead of homers, steals, and average. But I just kind of looked at like the top 15 versus the next 15. And just found some like interesting things about them. The reason like 15, like it's very arbitrary to cut off like who, you know, what that number is. But in a 15 team league, like those are your starting pitcher ones versus starting pitcher twos. And in 2023, there wasn't really much of a difference between those groups, between the top 15 and the next 15. Put a tweet out earlier today, the top 15 as a group In 2023 had a 3.79 ERA. The next 15 had a 3.70 ERA. So the next 15 actually had a lower ERA. The next 15 had a higher WHIP, 1.18 WHIP to 1.14. And then the strikeout rates were pretty much identical, 9.7 to 9.6 strikeouts per nine. So it was just very interesting to see that kind of SP2, that second group of pitchers, pretty much match the quote-unquote aces. There were only three of the top 15, and we'll talk about some of these guys in more detail throughout the show. There were only three of the top 15 that finished with top 15 value. So that's Gerrit Cole, Spencer Strider, who in the top three, of course, finished 2 and 1, respectively, and then Zach Wheeler. The next 15 had seven. Had seven, man. There was just a lot of hits in that next 15 group. So a lot of busts in the top 15 as well. So I don't know. It was just interesting. And I think that one of the things that, like, I don't know, the trend has been that the top tier pitchers do tend to return the most of their draft day price. And so, you know, kind of the big question for 2024 is, was that was what we saw last year a blip or not? I don't know yet, but it was just interesting to see that next group outperform or at least tie the aces.
Yeah, and you get, you know, the early top 15, I guess you got six guys with 200 plus Ks. You still have four in the next 15. So to me, it goes to like the discussion points last season of, you know, you got some guys up top, or can you wait? Because there's so many guys that feel similar and just take like your chances. And obviously you could have gotten wrong. Even if you waited to go 16 through 30, there were some really good, but also some like, yeah, we got some problems here. But overall, I think I'm not going to say waiting was the way to go, because you still got some big boys up front, but waiting didn't suck. That's for sure. I guess The biggest thing for me is like five of the top nine gave you 200 plus Ks. And that's one thing we always talk about, that is strikeouts being a big thing. Now, given you had to suffer through Dylan Cease to get 200 Ks, Nola had a down year, but still got you 200 Ks. And then the top three dudes in Burns, Cole, and Strider. So you kind of, you wanted those strikeouts, but you also wanted the ratios. It was a tough go. Obviously, DeGrom and Woodruff were up high. Injuries are injuries. You can't do much about that, but very interesting to say the least.
Yep, absolutely. And so, like, yeah, the busts in the top 15, there were different like kinds of busts. I thought there was like Sandy Alcantara, who obviously for 2024 isn't pitching, but like he was a bust in terms of performance. There was the DeGrom injury risk that everyone kind of knew about. There was the Brandon Woodruff injury, which I don't, you know, you could say he was injury prone, whatever, but that kind of came out of nowhere. The Dylan Cease was performance based. Rodon was injury. Bieber, a little bit of both. And then there was Julio Urias. So like there were different types of busts in the top 15. And that like, I don't know, that's starting pitching in a nutshell. I mean, it's so hard to predict this stuff that you're going to have breakouts and busts. And there's those different types that we saw this year.
Yeah, we'll talk player to player here in just a second, but it's just fun to look at this, and it'll be interesting to compare it to 31 through 60 to see how kind of diverse the finishing points are there, to make you wonder if it's even worth waiting even longer type thing, like getting in just one guy in 15 or 16 through 30 and then going heavy in the next go around. So yeah, we'll have to kind of see how it all plays out, but very, very, when Zach Gallen finishes fourth at the position, says a lot of how things went this season.
Yep, the 21st taken as well.
All right, let's just kind of run through the guys as usual. We'll start with Corbin Burns. Now, this was a discussion point a lot last year. Burns, Cole, which one do you go with? One at an ADP of 15, one at an ADP of 16. Burns finished 18th at the position. Cole finished second. We'll get to Cole in a second. But Burns had an interesting season. 3.39 ERA, 1.07 WHIP, 200 strikeouts. Got to 193 innings after 202 in 2022. It was just, it was a definite step back for Corbin Burns, I guess the nicest way to put it. Like the K to walk was only 17.1%, which is a bit of a downswing for Corbin Burns. What's your thoughts on what you saw here? Because I wasn't as excited as others were on Corbin Burns. He still had a really good season. Like, you'd probably be okay if you drafted Corbin Burns there, but in the end, it wasn't what you bargained for.
No, it wasn't. I think we both had Cole over Burns. Yes, when we did our.
I took Cole in our two early DC last year, and you guys all made fun of me. And Worked out well.
Hey. I don't think I did. I would never. I would never. Burns got a little bit better in the second half, and like it is nice that a quote unquote down season is still pretty much 200 Ks, a 3.39 ERA, and a 107 WHIP. Like that's pretty damn good. On top of that, he only had 10 wins, so that's why you got kind of finished 18th. Like that almost seems a little low. Like Burns turned things around in the second half. The second half, the guy had a 2.73 ERA. Remember, in the first half, it was up near four. The only thing, like in the second half with Burns, like the underlying skills only got like slightly better. On the whole, the fastball was down a full mile an hour. Your swinging strike rate was down from 17 down to 15 down to 12 in 2023. And so, like, I don't know, there wasn't much a change in pitch mix, which is probably good. The problem that I see is like every pitch, the swing strike rate was down for Corbin Burns. It wasn't just like, you know, they all of a sudden got on the fastball and it's something that correctable with one pitch. It was basically every single pitch in his arsenal went down from 2022 to 2023. So I don't know. And I'll probably say this a few times throughout, but like, I trust kind of the recency bias, the positive regression rebound a little bit more than I, for hitters than I do for pitchers. But if you buy the track record of Corbin Burns, and it's really damn good, if you think this is a down year and he still finished 18th, that's still pretty solid.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like he didn't crush you by any means. You were hoping for more, and it doesn't help when Gerrit Cole finishes where he finished right next to him when that was the debate going on. So
yeah,
that's the dagger. But yeah, Burns is now going around ADP 29 right now. So the 2-3 turn, which could change things if that's something you're into for sure. Gerrit Cole, we talked about him. He's second off the board at ADP 16, finished second at the position, AL Cy Young Award winner with a 2.63 ERA on the season to go with his 0.98 WHIP and 222 strikeouts, back-to-back seasons of over 200 innings pitched. And he's had 200 or more innings in five of his last six full seasons. Like, that is workhorse stuff with ERAs below three in four of those six seasons. He's been absolutely amazing. Toby, does Gerrit Cole still suck? No, he doesn't. Nope. K percentage was down this year. That is one thing. But overall, pretty darn good. What do you got on Gerrit Cole?
No, just I'm glad you quantified the run that Gerrit Cole has been on. Like, there have been, and just like, I don't know, in terms of like over time, it's very hard. You had like Johan Santana, who was great for a few years, was the best. You had Halliday, who was the best for quite some time. Gerrit Cole has been the best, if not one of the best, for like six straight years. That's really damn hard to do. Forecaster blurb on Cole is not super rosy. You did mention, Bubba, the drop in strikeout rate. That's from 32 down to 27%. Like that's a lot. The velocity was down. The whiffs were down. Cole is going to be 33 next year, and he has 1,800 regular season innings on his right arm. So you do wonder, like looking forward to 2024, at what point does this start to fade? Probably starts to fade a little bit, but probably a soft landing. It's been a hell of a run for Cole. And yeah, anyone who had him on their team this year, like those numbers are all green in the sheet for a reason. ERA, WHIP, and strikeouts, and 15 wins too. That also helps.
Doesn't stink either. So yeah, he's a stud. You got to pay for him in drafts, but yeah.
Is he first round in 2024? Is he?
He is pick 13. Yes. Yeah. So he's going as high as 8, as low as 17 so far. The top pitcher off the board in 2024 is the one that was third off the board in 2023, and Spencer Strider. He had an ADP of 29 going into the 2023 season, and he finished first at the position. And that says a lot considering the fall he had. And I say fall loosely because he was not horrible, but from the just insane ace he was to start the season to the level we saw at the end of the season, which caused him to finish like fourth or fifth in the NL Cy Young, which is a little too much for me. Didn't think he should have won it, but that was a bit of a what just happened voters situation. Spencer Strider was still great. He finished with a 3.86 ERA, 109 whip. Then again, that ballooned in the second half. That was not the first half ERA, but my goodness, 281 strikeouts. That is just asinine when you're talking about building strikeouts for your position to lock that. Like, you can take the ratio of kind of quote unquote hit with 281 strikeouts. Dude threw 186 innings. That was my concern, is how deep can he go? And he dominated in that regard. He was a beast. K to walk was still almost in line with 2022. I don't have much bad to say about him. If anything, maybe he's just getting a little tired because the longest he's gone in the season. And full steam ahead, Spencer Strider, unless I'm missing something. So what do you got on him?
Remember, like, I mean, the only like chink in the armor with Strider was, at least for me, was workload entering the season. So he did have, I remember what it, I think it was an oblique or something at the end of 2022. And that on top of only throwing, 130 innings in the majors last year. Yeah, that went all out the window. 187 innings pitched for Strider. The 3.86 ERA, I mean, you'll hear this everywhere. That was, I think, pretty unfortunate. HQ had expected ERA like 3.10. Just the best pitcher in baseball. 280 Ks is just so absurd. 20 wins. We didn't, you know, I probably should have put wins on this thing, but 20 wins on the Braves, like, you get that team support, and it's just, because that was the other thing too, is like, Strider's only going to go five and, you know, and not get that many wins. Well,
he went deep a lot. He was deep in a lot of those games.
Exactly. And had plenty of run support. So I don't really see that changing. Just hell of a year with numbers that are like pretty much DeGrom-esque with the health.
Remember how he wasn't going to be successful because he only had two pitches?
Yeah, there was that as well. Yeah,
that wasn't us. I'm just saying that was a big discussion point out there. But I'm like, it's a different era, folks. If you can have two dominating pitches, I think you'll survive in this day and age. The next guy is where the downfall began, and I'm not happy because Sandy Alcantara had a definitely bad injury at the end of the season. But I am going to say I was 100% not on Sandy Alcantara last season. I was preaching it from the rooftops. He was the fourth off the board, ADP of 30, one pick behind Spencer Strider. Imagine sitting there hoping Strider would fall to you. And then he goes right in front of you. You took Sandy. You finished 68th at the position, 4.14 ERA, 1.21 whip, 151 Ks. Some speculated the shift would hurt him because of the ground ball situation. There was a lot of factors, honestly, when it came to Sandy Alcantara. The BABIP did jump, but 25.025 on him, but still, home runs went up. There's a lot of things. So what do you have on Sandy Alcantara?
It's just funny. Yeah, the dichotomy here, Strider versus Alcantara. If you would have said before the season that Spencer Strider would have more innings pitched than Sandy, like, nobody would have taken that. And it's just, it's interesting, and maybe something I need to think about when I'm starting in on starting pitcher rankings, projections, whatever, for 2024 and everyone else out there, is like, what is that perceived quote unquote floor and stability for starting pitchers? Like, Sandy was a rock, a volume rock for a few years. Like, nobody was concerned about anything health-wise. Yes, there were concerns about, is he going to, you know, not win the Cy again, but is he going to, you know, are the skills versus results kind of a thing? But everyone thought 200 innings again, like, that was a thing. And on the other side of Spencer Strider, like, no way he can approach 200 innings. And so maybe we need to rethink what we know about starting pitcher health, because or maybe this is just like a one-off example, because the next guy we'll talk about, I think we all knew. But it's just interesting to see, like, that perception of volume, stability, and innings, how that can change pretty much on a dime in starting pitching. And it just makes it so hard to project these guys.
The one caveat I'll give Sandy, since you're talking about the innings and durability thing, he threw 184 innings pitched, and that was still good for 20th in all of Major League Baseball.
Yep.
There's only 19 pitchers better than him. And it's like, we're used to him just being this guy that throws 200 and 220 innings, whatever, like, leads baseball. He still was a workhorse in, you know, the current MLB like setting of things. It was just the strikeouts weren't there. Like, he'd go deep into games and he'd have like the one bad inning. He was almost going Aaron Nola style, minus the strikeouts at times. And it just kept catching up with them over and over again. And if you're not supplying the strikeouts like Nola did, like we kind of talked about earlier, then those ratios really crush you. And that was the bugaboo. And then he goes and gets hurt, unfortunately, not on purpose, obviously, just got hurt. And yeah, we might not, I don't think we're going to see him in 2024, but he tried to battle back at the end of 2023. So I never say never, but I don't think we see him in 2024. Let's put it that way.
Probably not.
I don't have a lot to say about Jacob DeGrom besides the fact we all knew this was a high likely situation with the injury. Like every discussion point about Jacob DeGrom was if I can get X amount of innings.
Yep.
And that was always the question. It's just like we kind of your, how should we look at Strider's increase in innings and Sandy's decrease in innings? Why are we even having the if question with a top 30 pick? Like that's where we need to like sit there and go, what are we doing with a top 30 pick? And I know I tried to force you into taking him like in round four or five of a draft. I know
that was one of the highlights of the preseason.
Yeah. But what do you got on Jacob DeGrom, who unfortunately did not make it through another season?
Yeah. I mean, he's just so good that the question was like, it wasn't, yeah, was he going to be healthy all year? It was how many innings does that, what's that break even point for innings? And like DeGrom is so good that if he even just threw like 120, 130, depending on what you projected for ERA and WHIP, like it's kind of worth it to do it. Obviously, he didn't get anywhere near there. But yeah, I just think back to that labor draft. And it's interesting to see DeGrom's ADP was up to 30th in the main events. That labor draft, DeGrom went the last pick of the fourth round. I remember you were on me to take Jacob DeGrom in that fourth round. Chance, and I'll admit, man, like it was tough, man. If I think if labor was an NFBC draft, that might have been the max for DeGrom for most of draft season. Do you remember which pitcher I took instead?
Kevin Gausman.
Kevin Gausman. So
no, I remember clearly because you reminded me a few times actually.
Hey, I don't win often, so I gotta when I do.
Yep.
Gotta make it known.
The next pitcher is a bummer for both of us because I think we're both team Brandon Woodruff. That's just been one guy we've both liked quite a bit. He had an ADP of 35, sixth off the board, finished 56, which honestly, the fact he still finished 56th to me says a lot of how good he actually was. You know, he battled injuries off and on throughout the season before the shoulder injury finally took him down for the rest of the year. He's going to be out for the 2024 season, of course. And it was just a rough one because he finished with a 2.28 ERA, 0.02 WHIP, only 74 Ks because he only threw 67 innings. And that was the crutch that the straw that broke the camel's back, as they say. So anything on Woodruff?
No, it's just sad because like I do think he's a top five, top three pitcher in baseball.
I still think he's and better like, than Burns, so I'll stand by that.
I agree. I totally agree. I mean, he did this, I'm speculating, but like he did this pitching hurt too. 2.28 ERA, 0.8 WHIP. So it just sucks. And it sounds like, again, no doctor, but it sounds like this is like career threatening.
That's the rumors on the street lately. Like that's the, anybody that signs him, basically, it's going to be one of those, like, here's $1 million for 2023, then prove it to me in 2024 type thing with like options after that. And because, yeah, people are thinking the shoulder deal, it's a, career threatening situation, which sucks in a big way.
Yep.
Now the name that every single season on every review, preview, whatever good podcast God. You do about starting pitching comes up in conversation. I just took him in round five of a 12-team draft. His name is Aaron Nola. And he's seventh off the board with an ADP of 35, same ADP as Brandon Woodruff. Here we go again. Woodruff or Nola, how did your season go? Like, there's so many of these guys neck and neck that if you would have taken one or the other, like, things look a whole lot different for you. 4.46 ERA, 1.15 WHIP, not ideal, but 202 strikeouts, which I just emphasize that because 202 Ks, let me, like, just sort through this for you real quick because I have the innings page up here. Strikeouts-wise, there were There were 17 pitchers with 200 or more Ks. That stretches things out quite a bit for you. And Nola did it in 193 innings. He's got 180 or more innings in six or five straight seasons. He's a beast. And I know it was a rough up and down season for him, but I'm still team Nola, obviously. So what do you have on Aaron Nola?
Just if you draft Aaron Nola next year, like
don't watch
track your teams. Yeah, like do not watch him pitch. Do not look at his box score. It will be the Nola line of like six innings, scoreless through five, of course. Six innings, four earned, three homers, One walk and like eight Ks. Like that is Aaron Nola in a nutshell. And the interesting thing, for as much as like, as I was certainly one of them, anyone had Nola on their team, I mean, frustrating is like the adjective that comes to mind. For as frustrating as Aaron Nola was, still finished as a top 30 pitcher, still had a 115 whip, which is pretty good. Still had those 200 Ks, like you said, Bub, and still had those 12 wins. So it was really like the ERA and maybe a few more wins that we could have had. But like for a quote unquote down frustrating year, if we think this is Aaron Nola's floor, like I'm probably back in again next year. Oh, yeah. And as much as that pains me to say, like just think of what happened in 2022 with pretty similar skills, a little bit worse strikeout to walk, but I don't know. He's just so damn stable.
Yep, consistency's huge. Back in Philadelphia.
Yep.
ADP at 57. Like, how do you not like that? I'm just saying. It's
so the ADP has dropped quite. That's interesting because it was so it went from 35 last year to 57 so far.
Yep. He's getting a drop. He's gone as low as 83 in some drafts.
Yeah.
So it's hard for me to say no. Like, he's going right next to Tarik Skubal and Pablo Lopez. So yeah, that says a lot.
I think I'd go Nola Lopez, maybe Lopez, but that's
it's tough.
Also how we draft. But yeah, I'm back in on a fourth, fifth round Aaron Nola.
Heck yeah. Like that stability is so nice in these early rounds. It's like one of the early takeaways, just looking at the total top 30 board. There's certain stability guys where you can almost pencil like a window of these numbers. And you know, like unless something crazy happens, like an injury, you're gonna get something in this ballpark. And Nola's that dude. So I'm on board with that as well. The eighth pitcher off the board, ADP of 40, finished 41st in the position, is Shane McClanahan, guy I was out on last season because I was worried about the injuries that he kind of had towards the end of 2022 and things resurfaced in 2023. He had a 3.29 ERA, 1.18 whip, 121 strikeouts. So he was pitching well, all things considered, 115 innings pitched, but it was just, you know, the walk rate jumped. So what do you have on Shane McClanahan?
It was a little bit of a ticking time bomb. I think everyone kind of knew it was coming. It was just when. And I think people who took the leap probably were pretty happy with it, even though McClanahan finished 41st. Like, he did that in, what, two-thirds of a season. I know, like, replacement level pitching is really, really bad, especially in 15-team leagues. So a lot of it depends what you did with McClanahan and how deep your staff was once that injury hit. But kind of, I don't know, this is what I expected, I think. Just pretty dominant stuff, but the injury was going to come at some point.
Yeah, that's pretty darn accurate there. And the next guy, don't have a lot to say here. Dylan Cease, 42nd ADP, 42 ADP, ninth off the board, finished with 70, ranked 79th. 4.58 ERA, 1.42 WHIP, 214 Ks, which was nice. Yeah, I got nothing for you.
Yeah, how the hell do you finish 79th with 214 Ks?
Good because God. The ERA and I'm
guessing the ERA, the WHIP, wins.
Yeah, it's seven wins. Everything else that sucked along the lines of Dylan Cease. That'd be my guess.
Yeah, and actually, a 1.42 WHIP is actually like
kind for those of a many killer. Innings is really
that's
bad.
A killer. Exactly. Exactly. Great point. Over 177 innings, that WHIP is, and even the ERA, but definitely the WHIP. That's rough to
can't come back that. From. Yep, very difficult to overcome unless you somehow grab like Garrett Cole and a bunch of great closers. Otherwise, you're in trouble in a big, big way.
Yeah.
Now we get to a fun one because I got a mixed feelings on Justin Verlander, 43rd ADP, 10th pitcher off the board. He finished 23rd though. Like, he was not like an ace, but he was good. 3.22 ERA, 1.13 WHIP, only 144 strikeouts. Obviously missed the start of the season. Like, he slow started the season, only threw 162 innings. This kind of might be who he is now, looking at back-to-back seasons with Justin Verlander. But what are your thoughts on what we got with Verlander? Because he's not that like ace apparently, but could be a nice SP3.
I guess like he'll be 41 next year, and the skills are like more pretend to a mid-fours ERA guy. Like, I probably could have said this 3 years ago, 4 years ago, but at some point it's going to catch up to him. Like, it'll be 41 next year. I don't know. A good year, and, like, the dude proved me wrong all the time. And I would have predicted a worse finish than 23rd, especially with the early season injury. Like, it's damn impressive what he's doing. I don't know how he's doing it, but he is.
Yep. Speaking of another veteran pitcher who kind of this is who he is now is Max Scherzer. He was the 11th pitcher off the board, finished 22nd, 3.77 ERA, 1.12 WHIP, 174 Ks, 152 innings. He had 145 innings the year before. Back issues have been bugging him, shoulder, elbow, something all the time, lingering. But he's about 150 innings pitched guy, it feels like, right now. So what's your thoughts on Max Scherzer?
It was funny, the debates back and forth between Verlander and Scherzer is like, which old guy are you going to
trust?
You're going to take. And they had the same ADP and they pretty much finished right next to each other. I don't know who I have more faith in next year. Scherzer or Verlander.
I'd probably Scherzer, because it felt like when he was at least kind of healthy, he dominated.
He could shove when he's actually healthy. Yeah, it's
healthy. Just when's he healthy is the problem.
Yeah. And it's almost like with Scherzer, it's, the injuries are like, I don't know, a couple weeks at a time. It's not a – and he's back. And when he pitches, he's fine. So, like, yeah, probably Scherzer. But I don't know. I'm just concerned about both of them. But
yeah, it's a tricky situation, to say the least, with the old-timers. Carlos Rodon, I got nothing.
Dude.
I don't even know why people took chances on him with the injury already going on, but it never got better.
Good God. 6.85 ERA. He actually threw some innings, didn't he?
Yeah, he threw more than you'd expect, but man, you'd probably rather he threw none.
You'd rather not.
Yeah, yeah,
he threw 64 innings. I mean,
not a K per inning. Like, that's not bad, right?
Yeah. Yeah, just ignore the deep red. It's not the deepest red on this page. Probably should be. I probably shouldn't have
Because Robbie Ray got hurt so early. Probably should give it to Carlos Rodon or Alec Manoah, let's be honest.
That's true. Rodon was no. Manoah was worse. They were both
much worse.
I wonder how many teams had both
Rodon and Manoah. People that probably stopped looking at their teams about May, June.
I probably would have too.
Yeah. All right, Zach Wheeler. This is the fun one for me, at least, just because, you know, ADP is the 13th off the board. Had a 54 ADP, kind of where Aaron Nola is going this year, close to it. Finished 8th. At the starting pitching position, 3.61 ERA, 1.08 WHIP, 212 strikeouts in 192 innings pitched. He has been a workhorse, a ratio like that was his worst ERA since 2019. He had a sub-3 ERA for 3 straight seasons. He has been nothing short of outstanding, and this continues to, it feels like, just kind of gets overlooked at the position, but he's a dang beast. His ADP is at 30 right now. So what do you got on Zach Wheeler?
Yeah, like I would definitely take Wheeler at that price. I think Wheeler is a top five guy, given the combination of stability. Again, what we think of stability, given my Sandy Contra talk earlier. But no, it's just, I mean, you nailed it with the intro. Like, to have a sub-3 ERA for 3 years in a row, and really the skills this year were just as good, if not better, than they were during that run. So the only difference was, like, he didn't get as many ground balls. Wheeler threw a lot more fly, or induced a lot more fly balls, I should say. But swinging strike rate was up 2 points. Like, he's showing no signs of slowing down.
No, he was on a few bloom boards about the halfway point of the season, like by low.
He was a big second half. Yeah. Like, how did he actually do in the second half?
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, he did pretty solid.
Yeah. I wouldn't be too worried about what you got from Zach Wheeler in that situation. I would be worried about the next guy, though. Shane Bieber, 56 ADP, 14th pitcher, finished 90th at the position. Remember, he was picked 14th at the position, finished 90th at the position. 3.80 ERA, 1.23 WHIP, 107 Ks. Back-to-back years where the strikeouts just plummeted, battled injuries last season. It was dreadful. If you took a chance on Shane Bieber, it obviously stung in a, like, he was dropped in some leagues. It got that bad.
This is almost like the Yordan Alvarez, Greg Oden of pitchers. Like I feel like Shane Bieber's like 38 years old.
Yeah, he does feel
he's only
old.
28.
Yeah, that's why he was rumored in trades as of Tuesday. It was crazy.
He pitched like I probably think he's old because he's like falling apart. I mean, everything fell apart last year. Everything. You mentioned the drop in K's, swing strike rate. So this trend in whiffs from Bieber, 18% in 2020, which was that like magical year when he was the best player in all of fantasy in the COVID season, went from 18 down to 16, down to 14, down to 10. Velocity in a similar decline. Like it's tough. And this is where I say with pitchers, like I don't bet on that positive bounce back because you tack on the injuries. Like these guys can just fall apart a lot more often than they just get it back together. So faith in Shane Bieber is quite low at the moment.
No, you don't need to have faith in Shane Bieber anymore. Just kind of pass on that one, see where he goes, and enjoy the younger Cleveland Guardians, which we'll talk about on a later episode of the show. Julio Urias, don't have a lot to say here. He finished 53rd of the position as the 15th pitcher off the board. Injured season, bad season, might not ever see him again. So I have nothing really to say about him.
Yeah, it was off the rails on the field, and then obviously off the field, it was even worse. So who knows if we see him next year? I have no clue at this point.
Yep, no clue at all. But the guy we will talk about next was the 16th pitcher off the board, finished 7th position. Your man, ADP of 59, 3.16 ERA, 1.18 WHIP, 237 wonderful strikeouts and 185 innings pitched. That is Kevin Gausman, who was in the running for the Cy Young for a while there, but he's continued to put together great seasons ever since he came over to the Giants and now goes to Toronto. It's amazing to get out of Pittsburgh and Baltimore and see how things go for you. So, Gausman's been great. I don't have a ton to say, but he's your man, so I bet you got something nice to say about him.
No, just a thank you to Mr. Gausman for doing some things. He was one of the guys who, do you remember, I guess in spring training with the pitch clock, he was saying he had to rework his delivery, and it was a concern. I don't know if it was a concern for him. It was a concern amongst the community. And that obviously didn't, like, he hit the ground running. He had a couple blowups. He had some Aaron Nola in him. He had a 7 earned run thing in April, 8 earned run game in May. I think he had a couple other 6 earned run games. Like, he had some bumps in the road, but yeah, just a hell of a year. Yeah. I don't know how he only got 12 wins on the damn Blue Jays.
Offense as a whole sucked. Yeah. That was part of it. But yeah, you mentioned the bad outings. He also had just stretches of just dominance where nothing could be touched. It was just like art.
He had more double-digit strikeout games, I'll say, than like 6 earned run games. Like much more good than bad.
There's many tweets out there updating like how many double-digit K games. It was just insane what Kevin Gausman was doing. And hopefully he can continue to do that in 2024.
He had 9. So almost a third of his starts were double-digit.
That's insane just to think about that out loud. It's, you know, Strider probably had like 2/3 of his starts doing it, but he's a different beast as well. Christian Javier, ADP of 61. And here's, we're going to have a good comparison with the next guy because they both have the same ADP and how things could have changed for your teams. Christian Javier, 17th ADP, finished 58th at the position, 4.56 ERA, 1.27 WHIP, 159 Ks. He managed to throw 162 innings, made 31 starts. So that's all fine and dandy. But the guy we saw with the big strikeout stuff the previous two seasons, that disappeared. The ratios disappeared. It was like he looked lost at times on the mound, honestly, just kind of watching things. I didn't know what to, like, he finished, the postseason was better. Let's put it that way. But it was a rough go for Christian Javier.
The postseason was better. I think he finished. No, he did not. Oh my God. He had a 5.11 ERA in September, 6.17.
Yeah, it was brutal. Like, we talked about it many times on this show, I think, about people kept asking questions, should I drop him? Do you want this guy over this guy? Like, there were Cease versus Javier questions, I think, at one point in time.
Yeah, I'm going to throw up the L here. I was a big Javier.
Oh, I loved Javier, too. It was tough.
It was one of those guys, too, that I thought just such an extreme, extreme fly ball guy that I thought the ERA estimators were kind of hurting him a little bit too much and the projections were hurting him a little too much for the home run risk. But no, it was bad to lose 10 points in strikeout rate. Has to be one of the largest drops in all of baseball. That's probably a Bloom board I'll cook up in this draft season. And Javier probably will be on many of those bad ones. Cause it was just as ugly beneath the surface as above it.
Yeah. Be interesting to see how that one pans out. Now to the guy that also had an ADP of 61, 18th pitcher off the board, finished sixth at the position.
Yeah.
So the Javier versus Luis Castillo dilemma. Like, there's been a few of these. It's kind of fun.
Javier sandwiched.
Yeah. See, everyone like goes, why is everyone doing this person versus this person debates? Well, this is why.
It matters, dude. It totally matters. Like, your season totally changes. I mean, you've mentioned this a few times, like the Strider versus Sandy, 29 and 30 ADP. Wheeler versus Bieber versus Rodon. Woodruff versus Nola. Gausman, Castillo versus Javier. Like, it totally matters how you do, especially on the pitching side, because like, and I'm still reeling from the Trevor Rogers disaster of 2022. It totally matters who you pick in these first six rounds. And obviously it matters, but like it can totally screw up your team if you don't get these right. So that's why it is important to compare these guys.
Yeah, Castillo, 3.34 ERA, 1.1 whip. And that was always a thing with him, is whip issues. Not in Seattle, folks. 219 strikeouts and 197 career high innings. He was amazing. And so far with the Mariners has been nothing short of great. And I don't see a whole lot changing for a guy that's going to be only 31 this next year.
Yeah. Like the Seattle version, I don't have the split in front of me, but the Seattle version of Luis Castillo, just getting out of Great American Small Park, getting away from that defense, that when Castillo was there, defense is a little bit better now, but when Castillo was there, it was Eugenio Suarez playing shortstop. So we'll leave it at that. Only thing I'd see with Castillo last year that I don't like was the ground ball rate. For some reason, it's gone. So 2 years ago, the ground ball rate, and really early on in Castillo's career, it was in that like elite tier of upper 50s, 58%, 57% in 2020 and 2021. That dropped to 47 and then 39% last year. So I'm not sure if that's just him throwing fewer changeups, if that's pitch mix induced or not, but I don't know. I mean, honestly, man, I'm kind of nitpicking. Like, everything else looked great, and the stability, volume, and the team situation is all good for Mr. Castillo.
Yep, it's a steady Eddie workhorse, and it felt like forever it was always Castillo or Nola Castillo, because they both had whip issues and this, that, and the other. And
yeah.
I think it's still a great conversation point. That's all I have to say. Let's see where Castillo's ADP is. That might actually help this conversation point. Castillo's ADP is 31, so he's going well ahead of Aaron Nola right now.
So he's right next to Wheeler.
Castillo and Nola basically flip spots from last year. In the
ADP. You go Wheeler Castillo next year.
Cool. That's a turn. Real nice. Max Fried, 68 ADP, 19th off the board, finished 55th. 2.55 ERA, 1.13 whip, only 80 Ks because he only threw 77 innings, almost 78 innings. Injuries shut him down for quite a while. The stuff with when he was on the mound, that was the guy you expected. That's all I'm going to say, but he just couldn't stay healthy.
Yeah, and it's a little concerning because it's the forearm.
Yep.
It's the forearm. Like, he had 2 forearm strain IL stints, 115 days on the IL for Max Fried. Yet still, like you said, had the numbers. He just kind of freaks me out with that forearm. I just, that's an F word for pitching.
Yep. That is not good at all. You know what else isn't good at all? Alek Manoah. Yeah.
No. Here's your
68 ADP. So here you go. Fried 68, Manoah 68. We'll get to Zach Gallen, who was 72nd. So that's a fun one for you as well. But Manoah at 68 finished 20th off the board, finished 239. And we know the rest is history. So I have nothing else on Alek Manoah.
Oh, like, that was tough.
Yeah, brutal. Brutal stuff for Mr. Manoah. But what wasn't brutal is Zach Gallen. Again, ADP of 72, 21st pitcher off the board, finished 4th at the position. Best finisher in the 16 through 30 range. 3.47 ERA, 1.12 whip, 2.20 on the strikeout number. And the other number that counts a lot, 210 innings pitched. That is ridiculous. That is good for second best in baseball behind the San Francisco Giants, who we'll talk about later. And Zach Gallen won the NL Cy Young. So, absolute beast. I've always been a Gallen fan. Did I think he was this good? No, but I thought he was like kind of just a boring, like, you know, guy that can get the job done. So I'm very impressed. It's going to be tough to pay his ADP of 39 next year, though.
Yeah, that's what, like, I don't know. Like, he had a career. I think this was his career year. And it was a hell of a year, and he's a good pitcher. He's a really good pitcher. I'd be willing
to say last season might have been his career year, to be honest, outside of the win differential.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. Last year, the ratios were
way even better.
It's funny. So, damn, man. So, remember what I just said about Max Fried, forearm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Zach Gallen, we just mentioned the last two seasons for Zach Gallen, 2022 and 2023, as debatable career years. Guess what he had in 2021? Forearm strain.
Yep.
Like, I don't know. And we talked, is Pablo Lopez on this, or he's probably next Thursday? He had the 2 years of shoulder issues in a row and then did it next week. So, like, I know people tune in, you know, maybe for our friendly banter, maybe for our insights. And I don't know if people like when I say this is so hard to predict starting pitching. It's just like, how could you see this from Zach Gallen based on what we saw in 2021 forearm issues, and same for like a Pablo Lopez.
Well,
I mentioned Spencer Strider earlier too, with 187 innings, more than Alcantara.
I think you can't beat yourself up for that though, because it's a combination of like, okay, DeGrom, you knew better. Woodruff, you could have known better. McClanahan was a ticking time bomb. So, like, you're right on those ones. The same could have been said for Pablo Lopez, because I know I was out on him because the shoulder concerns. Like, what are we doing? And he shocked the world. Like, awesome, great stuff. But, like, I think as long as the process, like, is consistent, I'm not saying right or wrong, but consistent, that's all you can really do to prepare yourself. Because if you start like picking and choosing whatever you want, then there's no process, more of a biasy situation. Exactly. So if your process is there, that's all that really matters. So you can't beat yourself up over it, because in theory, like, you and I are both not really, we're more like risk adverse people. That's just how we draft. So if we see these concerns, like, you're not going to draft Max Fried next year, and literally it's play a coin toss. Is it going to work out great or is it not? We don't know. But I guarantee if you have that same philosophy over like seven or eight pitchers, you're probably going to be okay.
Yeah. And actually, the interesting, that's really well said. Yeah, I probably won't take Fried. I'll end up with Manoah next. See how it goes. But no, I do remember the Gallen thing. So while you were talking, I do remember, because I think I did a board on this, or we talked about this a couple years ago. He did have the forearm thing, but that was the first half of 2020. Yeah, and he finished the season healthy. In the second half, he was one of the, I think, leaders in innings
pitched. He led innings pitched. I remember that was a big talking point from your boards. Like, that was big in the offseason.
And so it is like, you know, it's, are you healthy? Like, what have you done for me lately? It's like, what are you healthy now? And I look at, like, to bring this back to who we just talked about with Max Fried, like, Max Fried did throw, 52 innings in August and September combined at a 279 ERA.
Plus the postseason. When he pitched, he was fine. I think a lot to it is the degree of forearm strains. Like, is it one where it's torn? Or is it just like it's a strain, so it's sore? Let's let the you know, the hurt muscle calm down, like a hamstring strain. It's not a tear, it's a strain. I think that's like, we hear forearm strain because most of the time that means Tommy John. But literally, it might just be like, hey, my forearm tightened up, like I just need to let it chill. Like, that could be so. But we don't know that because no team's telling us that.
I was just going to say that. Like, we don't. So, yeah, we're grouping all strains together, but like, exactly. What else are we supposed to do?
It'd be nice if, like, when they do the hamstring, it's like a grade 1, 2, or 3. Can we get that for forearms, maybe? But would it really matter? No, because we'd still hear forearm and be like, nope, not doing it. But I think that's the thing with the forearms. Like, the more these teams kind of have access to technology and everything, like the Gallen thing could have been a perfect example. Like, it was early in the season. Didn't feel right on the mound or whatever. Cool. Because he left a start or two last year, like the fourth or fifth inning, because like he felt like a tweak or something. I remember that with Gallen for a fact. And he came back and was just, nope, didn't miss a start, nothing. So,
yeah.
We're not doctors. We just podcast twice a week.
We just ask questions and don't. And try to answer them. But
exactly.
Varying degrees of success.
We try. Yu Darvish, 76 pitcher or 76 ADP, 22nd pitcher off the board, finished 77th at the position. And this is a tough one. 4.56 ERA, 1.3 WHIP, 141 Ks, only 136 innings. So it was injuries. It was a lot of factors. Dude's getting old. I still believe there's something good there with Yu Darvish, but the part that's good is really disappearing quickly is the problem with Yu Darvish.
Yeah, I just see, not to sound like a broken record, but these are the things that I mean, it's a steady decline the last 3 years in strikeout rate and swinging strike. Like it, that's not good. I don't know where the 195 innings came from last year. Again, on my diatribe on pitcher injuries here, like what the hell was that? Went back down to what I would think more with Yu Darvish with 136 innings this year. It'll be 37 next year. Given the age, given the pretty lengthy injury history over Darvish's career, with that slide in dominance, that slide in strikeout and swinging strike. I'm sure the price is cheaper, but so it's easy to say I'll probably be out, but I just don't have much faith, especially early in draft season where you're doing draft and holds and gladiators and that sort of thing. Like Yu Darvish and gladiator, like that's not the first comp that comes to mind.
DC ADP 224.
God, that's cheap.
Yeah, he's going around the likes of Brian Bello, Brendan Faught, Andrew Abbott, Taj Bradley, Emmett Sheehan. Yeah, it's interesting. Yeah, you're gonna start. You're gonna get the itch here pretty soon.
As weird as it says, you're giving me the itch. It's starting to come back.
All right, the 23rd pitcher off the board with an ADP of 80, finished 16th overall. That's Framber Valdez, 3.45 ERA, 1.13 WHIP, 200 strikeouts and 198 innings pitched, back to back years of almost 200 innings. It was kind of a fall towards the end of the season for Framber Valdez. You know, he threw that was it a perfect game or no hitter that he threw, but things fell apart quickly, I would say, towards the end of the season. And I don't know, just it wasn't as great as it started out. Let's put it that way. So what's your thoughts on Framber?
Yeah, I mean, it wasn't too bad at the end of the year. Like he had a sub four ERA,
are rough.
Yeah. Yeah. He had a sub four ERA in August and September. It was July, like
crushed him.
July was death. A 7.29 ERA, 162 WHIP. Over and all your teams starts.
Took it. And all your teams took it. That's the
and
problem.
All your team, yes, because Framber was an auto start. I had Framber in the main. Yes, the second half skill slide is kind of troublesome, kind of worrisome, but no real sign of injury. Velocity was down a little bit, but had some more whiffs in the second half. The weird thing with Framber, I mentioned this a couple times. It's ground ball rate. Like as you get into the 50s, it's really helpful. As you get to the upper 50s to the 60s, it's like uberly helpful. And Framber in the second half, from first to second half, went from 57% ground ball, which is that like that's when you really start getting rewards, down to 52. And so like if that ground ball rate stays in the 50s, like that's it's still really good, but Framber needs that to be back more where it was the previous two seasons when it was 70% and 67% leading the league in ground ball rate. So don't know if it's just like an arsenal tweak or something that he does need to do to get the ball back on the ground. He obviously has shown the ability to do that for a long stretch of time. So just kind of as I'm talking through it, I'm not too worried about Framber for next year. He's an innings machine. Quality start machine and probably on that team a win machine in 2024.
I just remember the biggest like bummer with Framber Valdez is especially for like doing second half like underdog drafts, like the smart people, way smarter than me, that were analyzing schedules. Framber had the easiest schedule out of like any pitcher on the board, and it did not pan out that way.
So in the second half, he had one of the easier, or just in general? Yeah,
in the second half. Like if you're doing the post all-star underdog drafts, like some of those guys are analyzing like pitching matchups, best like stacks for hitters and stuff. Framber rated out very well, and it did not pan out so well. So that was the bummer with Framber, but that's the breaks we do. Joe Musgrove, he 24th pitcher off the board, finished 48, 305, 114, 97. When healthy, was great. Wasn't healthy enough, though, only 97 innings pitched. No miss the start of the season with the broken toe. Then he has had other issues throughout the season. it sucks because he sits around in drafts for a while, and I'm always tempted to take him because he is really good when he's on the mound. I just don't know his health situation right now.
Yeah, and it the timing also sucks. Like, Musgrove was hitting his groove, started terrible. Like, his first two starts in April had more earned runs than innings. In July, the dude had five starts, 36 Ks, five walks, a 1.45 ERA. Like, things were going, and then the shoulder. So I do say, like, watch the reports on Musgrove, but can we trust the reports? I at least in big drafts, I got to see him in spring training before I'm putting down even mid rotation draft capital on Musgrove. Cause it could pay off. The skills I think are still there and still good, but shoulders, man, worse than forearms.
Yep. Definitely. This was a tough part of the draft. Cause after Framber, he had Musgrove injury problems. Tristan McKenzie finished 212 due to injuries. Robbie Ray 219, obviously an injury. So he had a three pack there, which stunk. And then if you avoided that landmine, George Kirby was the 27th pitcher off the board at ADP at 96, finished 11th at the position, 3.35 ERA, 1.04 WHIP. To find a 1.04 WHIP with 190 innings pitched near ADP of 100 is amazing. 172 Ks. Kirby was him, as the kids say, when it comes to value in the draft. So I know you're a Kirby guy. What do you got on him?
Yeah, I'm a Kirby guy, but I think, like, it sounds like everyone's a Kirby guy. Because George Kirby's, like, very expensive. Yeah. Very, very expensive. I forget which pitcher we were talking about before with WHIP. Nola. Nola with the 1.15 WHIP. The most underappreciated category in pitchers. And because George Kirby literally does not walk anybody, like, the walk rate doubled almost from 2% to 3% from first half to second half. You're basically locking in an elite WHIP, probably a pretty good ERA. And even the strikeouts, like, the knock on George Kirby is a low strikeout rate. He had 172 strikeouts.
Yeah, that's still pretty solid.
Like, that's good. So, and then you look at the second half, like, in the season, he started throwing a split finger more in the second half. The whiff rate went up 3 points, which is huge. I can see why George Kirby, I think he's fully priced, but I can see why. Like, there's so much to like.
Yeah, I like him quite a bit. If I have to be a play contrarian, it might be better off for the preview show. It's the Sandy thing to me. He's an accumulator. He has to have the innings to make it work. But I think there's more.
That's fair. No, that's fair.
I think there's just more to work with Kirby, watching his, like, the splitter and stuff like that. I think you can make an argument for that. But at the same time, again, if he's not going deep, or if he has a rough outing, or, you know, gets BABIP to death, that all changes real quickly. So my only concern. Next pitcher off the board, another fun one here, Tyler Glasnow, 105 ADP, 28th pitcher off the board, finished 31st at the position, 3.53 ERA, 108 WHIP, 162 Ks in 120 innings, a career high for Tyler Glasnow. He had 10 fewer strikeouts and 70 fewer innings than George Kirby. So there's my, like, comparison thing is, do you want to take the guy that's, you know, he's pretty darn elite and he might have a blow from time to time, or Kirby who has to accumulate? That's the fun discussion point for me when you're doing drafts. But with Glasnow also, Kirby's been durable. Glasnow is not. So we're not doing that right now. That was a review show. What's your thoughts on Tyler Glasnow?
I think you're pretty happy if you drafted Glasnow and you got the 31st overall.
Now, see, I'll take pitcher. The L on him because I was scared with injuries.
No, same. And again, these, I don't think we mentioned this during the show, but these rankings are the end of season ranks are from Razzball. I was pulling up its pitch mix because there was a big change in ground ball rate for Glasnow, and he threw a lot more sliders. Maybe that's why. Ground ball rate jumped from 45% in 2021 up to 51%. He's in that 50 range, like I mentioned with Framber. The difference is Tyler Glasnow over a full season could strike out 250 guys. Like, he is that good. It's the same question that, you know, we had entering the season, though, is what does that innings total look like? 120 innings last year, like, it's kind of more than I thought he had. That's pretty good.
Yeah, I was surprised when I pulled it up. I did not think he got there.
So, like, who's to say that Glasnow can't, again, going back to our discussion before about Gallen and Max Fried and finishing healthy, who's to say Glasnow, who finished strong, finished healthy, can't go to from 120 to 150 or 160. If that happens, like,
yeah,
look out, man.
It's fair. I know I'm scared. I'm scared to take that.
Oh, yeah, me too. Me too. He's never done it before.
No, but I think they're, I can't remember. It's back to last season, but someone was tweeting it out like towards the end of the year. It's like a month ago. Last season, a month ago, that something like per game stats, he was by far like the best in baseball type thing based on his 21 starts. Like it was DeGrom-esque type stuff. Like he was the same, if not better than Spencer Strider type situations. It was some pretty crazy stats, which makes sense if you think about it. Like you really start breaking it down. I'm like, yeah, he's pretty damn good if you look at it all. So I guess we'll have to see if he gets traded, where to, all those kind of things. But for now, on the review, pretty darn good if you took that gamble. Hunter Green, 29th off the board, finished 117, 4.82 ERA, 1.42 WHIP, 152 on the strikeouts. The Ks were great. Ratio sucked. Great American Small Park injuries. 112 innings pitched. I'm still terrified of Hunter Green.
Yeah, it's kind of, I think we're gonna have like the same conversation we had last year. It's like this. There are pieces, but the context around those pieces has improved slightly. Like the Reds had a pretty good year and should give him some run support, but I don't know. You like there's that sign. So there's that September 20th game, Hunter Green against Minnesota, 7 innings, 1 walk, 14 strikeouts. And then there's other, you know, a month before that, he gave up 5 walks, 2 starts before that, he gave up 4 walks. Like, I don't know what we're getting with the guy. Ceiling's high, but like, I don't know, inconsistent.
Yep. I'm with you. So I'll just kind of avoid that train. And I'd rather go to the next guy.
Look at this guy. I didn't even notice that at the end. There's Bubba getting happy.
The NL Cy Young Award, the major league leader in innings pitched this season with 216 innings pitched. He was the 30th pitcher off the board with a 110 ADP, the same as Hunter Green, by the way. And he finished 12th at the starting pitching position with a 3.25 ERA, a 1.07 WHIP, and 194 strikeouts. Kind of Kirby-esque, if we really want to get into all of this. And this is after a 2.9 ERA in 2022 and a 3.03 ERA in 2021. And that is the one, the only, Logan Webb, everybody. Put some respect on his name, please.
Well done. I got nothing to follow that up with. Dude's a beast, man.
Yep, I was all in on Webb. I took a lot of back and forth conversations last week, not from you, but from other people. Oh, you can't strike guys out. This is where I will be honest, and people hate hearing this. Watching games once in a while does help, because when you watch Logan Webb, he is a pitcher. He can strike out guys when he wants to. And I mentioned it, I think, last year on our preview show, his pitch mix adjustments towards the end of last season carried into more pitch mix adjustments this season, and it made him a different pitcher. Problem is that could revert, obviously, because it just takes a rough game here and there, a BABIP change, whatever, similar to my Kirby comments. But I think Logan Webb is an outstanding pitcher of the game, and he showcased it in a big way this last year.
Threw a ton more changeups.
Yep. Pitch mix change, baby.
Yep. Interesting. Yep.
So we'll see how that carries over. I'm curious to see how his spring goes, to see if he, because he was developing a pitch at the end of 2022, and just a million different little things for him. So I'm curious to see where it keeps going. All right, any final thoughts on the starting pitchers? You mentioned the things you kind of saw early on. Anything else before we head on to some listener questions? Because to me, we talked about, like, you know, the top end and then scattered around. To me, it's just pockets of ADP debates and how that went for you, because it got dicey quick at certain spots.
Yeah, I think those are my two big takeaways, was A, what you just talked about, those individual player debates, which are important to have because the difference in getting that right and wrong is massive. And then B, that what I brought up at the top of the show, that top for 15 versus the next 15, I think that was a one-off. Like, usually the top 15 is a lot better. Have not looked too much at the starting pitcher ADP for 2024, but it'll be interesting to see if that trend continues, because if it does, like, it makes a ton of sense to just load up on bats your first few rounds and then volume this next group. So I don't know.
Especially if you're doing our hitting reviews and noticing, you know, like every position, the top like 5 to 10 guys, just get the big dogs and then pepper the pitching later.
No, that's a great tie-in to our hitter stuff, because that, I mean, that was the roadmap to success in 2023. Will it be in 24? I don't know, but like, it sounds good to me.
Like your first three rounds, you could have got elite hitters, and they went like Zach Wheeler, Kevin Gausman, Zach Gallen, somewhere in that combination of like two or three guys of George Kirby in there. Even if you got three of those guys, like if you just waited and went boom, 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 like, oh my God. Now, you know, like that's called hitting the nuts in gambling, but that's kind of how, that's how you have to win some of these things. So,
and then Alec Manoah hit your nuts as well.
You lost your nuts with that one. All right. A couple listener questions before we head on out here. Our buddy Colin My Shot, AKA the artist formerly known as Little Book
right.
Tom,
the rebrand,
has questions for us here. Not to derail the pitching talk too much, but as you noted on all the hitting review pods, the top end picks at every position panned out at surprisingly high rates. I'd love to hear you guys speculate on whether that's due to, number one, projections being more accurate, accessible, and commonly used in draft prep, or two, the increasing length of draft season where November DC's Gladiators helped to really solidify the top players by March, three, frankly, just a really lucky year that is unlikely to repeat in 2024. Honestly, I think one and two work together.
Yeah, probably. We're seeing, like, if I had to lead one, probably two, but like I think one and two do work together. Draft season just so, it gets earlier and earlier and earlier every year. And Matt Cederholm wrote a piece on this in the Forecaster. It's just this, what we call the anchoring effect of ADPs, and how, yes, ADPs do change once you get to main event drafts, but all draft season we hear about is how these early ADPs, you know, what they are, and they can anchor each other and affect that. So, I don't know. I'd actually lean two and three as opposed to one. I'm not sure how much more accurate the projections are than what they used to be. I don't think they're all that accurate at all, to be honest. But
the reason I think one and two work together is because he mentions how the projections are used in draft prep. So using the draft prep
creates the
ADP. Like, so I think it's kind of a most people nowadays have their, you know, they enter their projections, it spits out their numbers and all these things. And those are the guys doing a lot of drafts, if that makes sense. So that's where I think it is, given these early DCs and Gladiators don't have a ton of projections unless you create your own. So a kind of, you know, yin and yang situation. But yeah, I think there's correlations. If you had to pick just one, I would say two. It's probably the answer. But I think one leads into two at some point in time. I mean, my thoughts. All right. We have another question from Colin My Shot. I don't know which. Okay. A list of starting pitchers from 2021 to 2023 with over 400 innings pitched and an ERA less than three. Max Fried, Max Scherzer, Shohei Ohtani. How did he not make the list?
I just took him up because he was drafted as a hitter. That's fine.
I'm just making sure. I might as well bring it up before someone says it later. Corbin Burns. Fried is projected to be the 11th in ERA, 185 innings pitched for Atlanta, ADP of 69, SP18 right now. Is this too low? This goes back to, do you believe he's healthy or not?
Yeah.
If he goes 185 innings, he is too low, yes. That's my two cents.
Because if he goes 185 innings, he'll probably get 18 wins on that team.
The wins, he gets about 165, 70 Ks, and the ratios will be outstanding. Yep. That's Max Fried.
I think there was a response to that tweet that brought up the forearm or somewhere around there in Twitter. And I mean, I don't want to rehash what I just said about Fried, but I'm starting to come around a little bit just talking through it in that the end of the season, he looked damn good and healthy. So that matters. That matters.
And then he says, please forgive the George Kirby slander.
Whoa.
The steamer projections, Kirby has an ADP of 44, has 191 innings pitched, 3.6 ERA, 1.12 whip, and 184 Ks, where Fried, ADP of 69, has 185 innings, 3.56 ERA, 1.23 whip, and 177 Ks. Why is there a 25-pick gap, especially with Fried on the much better team and with this exceptional track record of success? I'm going to say it's just because of the injury concern, personally.
Right. Which, in probably theme of the show, and that, I mean, that is why. It's the perceived volume. How did that perceived volume work out for drafters between Strider and Sandy last year? Yep. So, like, again, I don't have the answers. I'm just raising more questions. But, like, could Max Fried blow Kirby out of the water next year?
Oh, yeah. Would anybody be surprised? Not crazy.
Not terrible. Not,
yeah. Nick Davies says, I'm curious what the range in numbers were with one group to the next. Like, obviously, Manoah would be the bottom of the next 15, but was there a tighter range of the pitchers between 1 through 15 than 16 through 30 where paying up makes sense?
I think you kind of covered it, Bubba, in terms of there were just like little mini pockets throughout. Like, so if I'd look at the top 10 starting pitchers, only two of those top 10 finished in the top 15. So like really your top 10 kind of sucked. You had Burns, Cole, Strider, who were Cole and Strider obviously great, but that meat of the top 10, Sandy, DeGrom, Woodruff, Nola, McClanahan, Cease, like that was a bad, bad place. So if I split that, you know, I mentioned the stats at the beginning of the show, the top 15 versus the next 15. If I even took like, I mean, I know it's cherry picking, but starting pitchers 4 through 10 did this, and starting pitchers, what, 16 through 21 did this. That 16 through 21 group was Gausman, Castillo, Gallen. Yes, Manoah was in there, but I don't know. It's just hard, always hard to pick and choose those kind of arbitrary cutoffs.
Yeah, it's not the easiest to do, especially with such diverse pitching, let's put it that way. So yeah, makes it really tricky. And then Dave Sawa says, can you make this sad Cardinals fan happy by saying something nice about Lance Lynn or Kyle Gibson? Nah, I didn't think so either. Well, they'll be on the next episode. Both of them should be, just guessing off the top of my head. So yeah, we'll have a lot to say.
I assume we'll see some Cardinal red next to Lance Lynn's name on the board next episode.
But I don't even know. He might. Miles Mikolas. I'll give you something positive. Miles Mikolas finished fourth in innings pitched at 201.1. He's one of only five pitchers to do over 200 innings last year. Only 137 strikeouts though.
Positive with Lance Lynn is just watch him after he strikes someone out to end the inning. It's pretty beautiful.
He's a beast specimen. It's joy. Yeah. Absolute joy. What else is an absolute joy is another episode in the books, Mr. Bloomfield. So next episode, Thursday night, 11:30 Eastern, 8:30 Pacific time, give or take. We'll have SP2, 31 through 60. So any other thoughts before we head on out of here and wrap up the show?
31 through 60, and then we'll throw the breakouts on there and talk about those guys at the end. But no more thoughts. I gotta get ready for this shark-filled gladiator coming up in 9 days.
We're going to be little minnows in the shark field pond. It's going to be so much fun. It's going to be great.
It's okay.
Oh, I ain't scared because I'll talk so much trash if it works out. So it'll be fun. I don't plan on it working out, but I'm not scared. I'll say that one time. I just hope Gialdi's in the YouTube chat that night just so we can have some fun with him. But we'll see. That's a little over a week away. We got to see you guys on Thursday. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I'm at BD Entrick. This is Bubba the Bloom, episode 86. Catch y'all next time.